All right, Richard, you can start.
We've called this meeting to order. This is a Port Brookings Harbor workshop meeting, Tuesday, January 11th, 2020, at 10 o'clock. Danielle, roll call, please.
Larry?
Here.
Ken?
Here.
Sharon?
Here.
Richard?
Here.
Joe is absent.
I'm afraid to ask this question, but are there any modifications, additions, or changes to the agenda?
No.
No.
Okay. Anybody need to declare a potential conflict of interest?
No.
I have the art at the port. I'll declare potential conflict. Is that, should I do that, Gary?
Yeah, I think he's, that'd be safe.
Well, he's just a good reason.
Oh, just because I'm married to the person that runs the whole thing.
Okay. So with that in mind, I'm here to make a motion to approve the agenda.
I'll make a motion to approve the agenda as written.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to approve the latest agenda, which goes up to item Y. Any further discussion? Hearing none, Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes.
Any public comments? I see none in front of me. Danielle, do you have any that you're aware of?
No.
Okay.
Our attorney is online.
Welcome. All right, that brings us to information items, starting with item A, non-mortgage charter fees.
All right, this item, we've been talking about this item for several months, and we have put together a decal that we're proposing to put on the boats. We're proposing a $300 fee, a calendar fee. It goes from January 1 to December 31st. The charter fee can be paid at the kiosk. I did add some more information to the meeting agenda of the kiosk screen. We're going to be removing, we're proposing to remove the trailer storage part of it, since we're going to be reducing our trailer storage anyways, at least that's what we're proposing. So we figured just make that move at the same time, kind of save us money on reprogramming and whatnot on that screen. We're also removing the donation part of it because I don't think we've gotten much donation through that kiosk since we've had it going for 3-4 years, I think. So those are some of the proposals that we're going to be looking for. Any questions?
Yeah, I have two. What's involved in reprogramming the machine? It's not something we can do in-house?
No.
So what would it take to be able to do it in-house?
Well, there's programming that I think a lot of it is off-site.
Yeah, they do it off-site. Like, we tell them what they want, and then they get into however they get into it. They reprogram it, and then we can just go look at it. They don't actually have to send somebody else to do it. Right. But the machine that we have it's a good machine for giving launch tickets and stuff, but it's not that smart of a machine. And
okay.
It only has so much capacity in it. That's why we had to eliminate the donations, just so we could get the screen to put the charter fee on. We can only put so many things on there. And then when you start deleting words are populated from one screen to another. So if you change one, it changes it all. It's not that smart. You know, there's a lot of things that you have to do. The screens have to be in sequence. Like, we took out the word expires. Because expires populates to anything that you have that's a pay screen. When you go to push a pay screen, it all has an expires. So we're going to take that out so our $300 annual charter would fit. The screen, you can only have that much on your screen, all the words you can have. So that's why we're getting rid of some of the stuff, because it just doesn't have enough room to have it.
So this machine, is this something we lease and they maintain it, or?
No, we bought it, we own it. Just the tech support that comes with it is through the manufacturer of the unit.
Yeah. There's also an annual fee that goes along with that.
Okay,
my other question is, are we going to change the color of the decal each year?
Yeah, we can. Yeah, absolutely. We can change whatever color we want.
It'll be more visible.
Yeah.
Well, you probably ought to sync it with the annual decal. Sorry if she's on a biennial basis, but there are four colors that are normally used on the registration decals: orange, red, blue, and green. So you could probably sync the color of the decal with the ODS, or with the State Marine Board sequencing, whatever that is. That would make it easier.
Do you want the same color as the ODSW one?
Well, the same color as the Marine Board.
Or the Marine Board, I mean, I'm sorry.
So you'd have to ask them, you know, where you fit in. I just got mine. I don't remember what color they are. But
orange.
Are they orange this year? Okay. Well, they sync. They rotate between four colors. And that process was designed to aid enforcement, so that you could just look at the color without having to get up. And you'd have a pretty good chance it wouldn't be 4 years old.
Anything else?
So to make sure that we clearly state what we're talking about here, we're going to require everybody who runs a four-fee fishing service using port facilities to buy an annual permit to port $300 and display an annual decal. Both charter boats, large charter boats, six packs, guide boats, coal. Everybody's included.
Charters, any charter guide, commercial type businesses taking people out fishing for some sort of profit.
They're non-moorage.
Right.
They're non-moorage.
The moorage customers pay $200 for both.
Plus moorage.
Plus their moorage.
Okay. But we would require them to also display the decal.
That's what I'm asking. That's what you
one
guys
one of the questions that we're asking. Do we want, would we pay even more charters?
Yeah, I think that. I mean, that cleans it up, and I'm sure they'd be happy to stick that on their boat to make sure everybody knows they're legal. I'm not sure, other than the sign you're proposing at the port, how we would reach out to all these people that are day launching. I guess the word on the street would have to get to them somehow.
We'll put it on our website. We'll probably have it on the main page first for a while, at least for maybe the first year we'll have it on our main page that we're going to have the non-mortgage paying, but then we have signs put up.
Yeah,
we're also going to put the signs, a couple of these up, and then at the kiosk.
You may visit with the Marine Board and see if they have any kind of a monthly or annual publication that goes out to license guides. You might want to just put that in there as an FYI.
Okay.
To notify those people that if you're going to use the port breaking harbor, what's required. Do you have a place that you want to specify to display that decal?
Do you? Visible?
Well, again, I hate to keep throwing you at the Marine Board, but I would suggest you talk to them because they have decals they issue for specific bodies of water. You know, if you're going to guide on the road, you got to have a decal place someplace. You might ask them where that is. And then make sure we're sort of like that, but not a direct compliant or conflict with what they're requiring. Just someplace that I would suggest would be someplace that's readily visible aft of the house or the operator situation.
You're talking about placing on the boat.
Right. Normally we would, you know, somebody would designate a standard location. So when you looked at a boat, if you were to look for that, you'd go, well, it's got to be right there if they have one.
Okay.
And most of the ones I've seen are, you know, right near the stern.
Okay.
Anything else? All right. That moves us to item B, the court best management practices amendment.
All right, this the BMP had to be updated. It's kind of information B and C are kind of tied together. C is the or is it Green Board? They call it MAG. It's a maintenance assistant grant program. We've always, well, we know it as MAP, M-A-P, of maintenance assistant program, but they changed the name of it. But that program requires us to have a policy for maintaining the pump outs and also restroom cleaning, because that one restroom at boat launch is kind of, it's under their grant terminology. So they want to see our restroom cleaning procedures. So I figured the best place to put it would be in the best management practices. So I just updated the plan, and it will suffice their full qualifications and their application for this grant.
So they then will pay us to do a portion of what it costs.
Yeah, they pay us about $4,200 or $4,800 a year. That's the maximum they'll pay out of our expenses.
We have two pump outs.
Yeah.
One
here
and
one at the field dock.
Over on this courtesy dock and then one at the field dock. And do they get used?
Yeah.
Do they? This one too?
They both get used quite a bit. During the summer, they get used quite a bit. And they work great. Really. They work great.
So that's just a pump and a macerator that goes straight into the sewer system.
Do we still get COVID money for cleaning restrooms?
No. That ended a couple years ago.
No.
Okay. Any questions about, I guess we could do B and C at the same time, if there's any questions about these two items. I guess this kind of comes under the heading of government.
Yep.
Okay. All right, that brings us to item D, which is speaking of government. The Oregon Department of Environmental Quality Tier 2 corrective actions and notifications to gear storage users.
We're on page 30 now. So as we've been talking about our DEQ Tier 2 corrective actions, we had a deadline as of December 31st, 2021, and we've asked for extension since our FEMA project is getting, it's evolving, and we want to make sure we have the right information for DEQ. So Jack is getting that updated information to our Aquarius Environmental, which is another engineer working for our DEQ regulations. And we hope to have everything put together by the end of the month, January 31st, to submit to DEQ for corrective actions. Before we submit it, then I'll have a special meeting, because we won't have it ready by the next regular meeting, but we'll probably ask for special meetings to review the submittal. It's going to be pretty, it won't be detailed construction items. It's going to be just general specifics that, you know, paving and roads and stuff like that. We don't want to give DEQ too many specifics yet, because we don't have everything nailed down exactly what we're going to be doing. And they give us two more years, or actually another year and a half, to get these things implemented. And so far, it's still kind of meeting our schedule for FEMA. So everything is still lining up.
So this item will not be an action item at the next meeting?
It will be for the draft letter. So part of this kind of got twofold things. One, the DEQ part of it, but it makes sense to start warning our users of our gear storage things are going to be changing next year. And some things are going to have to change this year when we start putting in our seven basin. Some of the gear storage is over there and some of the roads. We're going to have to start moving things back and forth to get ready for construction. and move the, we have to reduce our boat trailer storage some more to make room for the gear storage, if that's what the board wants to do. Do that and get rid of the gear storage. I think it's, the gear storage makes us more money than boat storage at this point. Plus it provides more business as well.
So just out of curiosity, if we use the green building site then for gear storage, what's left for boat storage down there by the little real estate office of the owner?
Yes.
You have some capacity in there.
Yeah. I looked at it yesterday. If the boats were rearranged a little more, I think maybe 10 more boats in there probably than what's currently in there. So it's going to be maxed out really quick.
So what we already have, that would pretty much accommodate them.
No, there's going to be some that's going to have to go.
Oh.
Some from the green building area.
Okay.
Yeah, there's like 20, I think I counted one the other day, like 23 boats in there. And we might be able to get half of those into the other site. That's going to be full.
So that transition then will be on a first-come, first-served basis?
Yeah, probably first-come or the longest. I know there's some people who are not paying, so they'll be the first ones to go. So.
Yeah.
Try to weed them down to having them leave because of their own inabilities, and then we'll see what's left. Hopefully we can get all the good paying customers and good customers in there. That's our goal. But once we enter space, that's all we have.
I think we're kind of on the edge of having to deal with hangar queens too, to just go in storage and never get moved, you know, to become kind of a problem. So I don't know how we deal with that. I'm not sure what kind of criteria you could write. As long as they're paying, I guess they can leave their boat where it is, but that's always a challenge when you've got some storage space that you end up with, you know, folks.
Yeah. So. I have a question on that. There's a lot of gear stored down there that appears to be obsolete gear that hasn't been used in years in many cases. Have you considered giving the owners of that gear notice that it will be removed and give them a heads up that, you know?
Kind of what his letter is kind of, you know, that we're warming them up to, it's going to be minimized. You know, it's probably not going to, we're not going to have room for the cargo trailers and the semi-trailers and all this stuff. It's going to be crap hot. I mean, it needs to be able to be nice, tight, and they're not going to have as much freedom as what they have right now.
It's going to be consolidated. And we'll remove the ones that don't do it. Some crap pots haven't been used for a long time. We'll be asking those to leave. Or whatever gear that hasn't been used, like you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah, when we have to make it a smaller footprint and make decisions on who's going to stay and who doesn't, it'll be based upon working boats, account history, and, you know, where their standing is with the port. And we'll try and keep the working boats and you know, the people that are using their gear higher on our list than the ones that aren't, and they need to find somewhere else to put their stuff.
We probably don't have any kind of policies about gear use, do we?
Well, in their lease,
well, you're talking in the wrong direction.
Their lease should state what is required.
They have a gear storage agreement that each one of them signs. It might be something that we have to take a look at and re-look at the items that we're allowing to be kept here. You know, and make it much more specific about what they can keep here.
Well, in the agreement, there's no guarantee that the port will have space for them either. So the agreement goes month to month, or they pay a year. We allow them to pay up through a year, kind of like everything else. So if the payment ends, the agreement ends, then they move on. I mean, there's no guarantee that we have gear space for everybody.
Well, I realize that, you know, fisheries change and the use of the boats change. But again, I'm going back to the hangar queen notion that, you know, I've got this stuff out here in the yard and I guess I'm willing to pay to leave it out there, but at the same time, it's taking up space that people could use for active stuff. I mean, I know a lot of these drag boats pull those rollers off and some of the equipment on them to go crabbing and then put it back on and do those kind of things. Well, that's pretty normal use. I suspect some of them, you know, convert from salmon to something else to crabbing and move some of their gear off. But having a piece of equipment off of a boat that's going to go sit in the yard for 20 years, I don't know that that's, but I don't, then again, I don't know how you write a policy to deal with that.
I think we just need to narrow down what we're going to have here in the rest of the gear and to find an alternative spot. We allow a lot of gear storage here, you know, in relation to other ports. We allow a lot. So it's not out of the question that you can only store crab pots down here, you know, or a net reel with it. The bigger boats, you know, they have poles, there's shrimp hoppers, doors. We are going to find spots for those. We're going to utilize the spot there that's right next to the steel wall where those freezer trailers are at now to keep them there. Cause it's hard on our equipment to move that stuff all the way to the top versus just keeping it there. But as far as, you know, that's, what, 10 boats? Maybe 10 boats that, you know, have that kind of gear. And then the rest of it's mostly all crab pots. Some have salmon gantries. You know, little stuff like that, but most all of it can go on a trailer and go somewhere else too. So that's where we're gonna end up being. I mean, our goal is gonna be crab pods, something that we can stack, keep nice, put a tarp over, and that's it. Not rope and buoys and all this kind of crap just laying around scattered everywhere than it is right now. We're gonna try and get it a little more clean and neat.
So we're gonna try and break down the difference between necessity and convenience, what it sounds like to me, which I think would be a good...
Well, and it's going to force the boat owners to do the same because we only have so many spots. We only have so much room. So, you know, it's going to be on them to decide what they need down here and what can go elsewhere.
All right.
What's
how many vessels do we have that have 500 pot permits versus 100 pot permits, do you end up roughly?
There's probably 8 to 10 boats that have 500 pots. The rest of them are all 2 to 300. Basically, you can fit 300 crab pots in a 30 by 30 spot pretty well.
I'm sorry?
You can fit 300 crab pots in about a 30 by 30 spot. You know, 500 pots, they start needing a little bit more room, but, you know, that's already 30 by 60 for 500 pots, so it starts eating up room in a hurry. So that's the crab pots are going to be our main goal to keep here.
What is the size right now that we lease out, 30 by
30? 30 by 30 and 30 by 60 is our typical spots that we're leasing out right now.
Some have more, some have less. But we have roughly 50 people. 50 companies or 50 individuals paying for gear storage spots right now. And right now we're estimating on our map in the yellow areas probably 35. We can squeeze 35 or 40. So that's, like I said, like Travis saying, we're going to consolidate. They can't have everything that they want. It's like those containers and stuff are going to have to go.
What's a decrease in, like, say we have 1,000 square feet? What's the difference of area we're going to have when all this is done for storage that we have now? Half, third?
Maybe half.
Maybe not quite half. I mean, right now it's just super, it's extremely spread out, and we're going to make them consolidate. And
so by organizing, we're...
Organizing, we're going to save half the room.
Is it possible for us to get a copy or look at the storage lease agreement?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's on the website. We have all the forms on the website.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah.
I can look that.
Danielle, give that one to Travis.
I don't know if it'll reach.
It won't reach.
Yeah.
I'll talk louder.
Okay. Any other discussion on the Tier 2 corrective action, pure storage letter, or any of that?
No. They have a lot of work to do.
Well, I think a lot of work is going to be the theme of the court here for a couple of years.
Well, it's going to be good, though.
Yeah.
Don't most other ports not have gear storage?
More limited. Like Crescent City doesn't allow you to keep crab pots there year round. It's a staging basis only. Newport does have some gear storage. Not much for crab pots wise. They do have some, but it's a lot of other gear, poles, hoppers, things like that they have stored up there. Charleston doesn't have much for space. They let them stage it in the parking lots. I'm not sure about Astoria. I don't know with them, but it's a lot of ports run into the same thing that we're running into, and that's why they don't have it. You get your full space in your stormwater testing. I mean, everywhere you put these crab pots or anything that's tied to a commercial business becomes an industrial footprint, which means when it rains, you have to account for all that water, and it's extremely difficult and extremely expensive. So, I mean, that's a main reason Crescent City, Charleston, they let them stage it in their parking lot for a limited time because there's no requirements for it for a staging type purpose. But we have a large footprint. That's why we're trying to reduce it.
Beneficial to us at all to not have gear storage? Or
I think being the port that we are, I think we need to be able to allow some sort of gear storage, something for them to be able to store some of their stuff. I think what we're doing by minimizing the footprint and, you know, putting limitations on what can be here, I think we're still allowing them to do what they need to do, but, you know.
And at some point, that's going to be, hey, storage where their gear storage is.
Not right now. No.
Is it somewhere down the road? Have we looked at that?
It's this yellow area. I don't know if you've page 40 in the packet. This yellow area up here is what we are proposing for gear storage to go into. Paving it, we just don't have the money to do it.
That's also the future location for storage units. So
we don't want to get too carried away with putting too much infrastructure in until we're set on what we want that to be.
But the infrastructure in that yellow area, we do plan on using. There's storm drains that the Green Building site was built on. There's storm drains there. We're going to use the existing storm drains and probably put in a oil water separator with maybe a chemical thing, just that when the water hits, goes in the drains, we're going to be cleaning it. We're going to have to test that water now because we're changing the industrial footprint. So
would that be like similar to what we're doing in the boatyard for
similar.
The wash?
Yep, similar to that.
Okay.
Are you planning on eliminating the site there under the Green Building from future storage, covered storage?
What was the question?
I'm sorry. Are you planning on not building storage?
No, that's not what our plan is. This is just our next step to be able to get the paving work done. We need to be able to put this stuff somewhere. And until we have the funding and we know what we're going to do, you know, with that area, then that area is still open for development. Right now, it's just going to be used for gear storage while our FEMA project's happening and until we can figure out where else we're going to put the rest of the crab pots. But we still do have in the plans of that being storage units.
You know, if the board remembers, I did have like three-sided buildings. That's still in the works. I don't think it's going to be doable at this point, especially with the economy and the funding that we have under this project. It might be a future combination thing of putting these buildings up on, you know, over the pavement that we pave, and then moving gear storage out of there under these buildings, and then having this Green Building area for covered storage units. But it's going to be, we have to like Kyle was saying, we have to transition somewhere, and this is the best way to do it, get the construction going.
Yeah, I'd like to think down the future of looking at some economic development money here. That's really what we're talking about. We're trying to balance the issues that we're having with stormwater discharge with the need for us to try and provide some economic development opportunities for small businesses, which is what we're dealing with here. And having a place to store your crab pots adjacent to the port is a pretty important part of that, I would think, from an economic perspective. So that's kind of where we're going to have to balance the need. But if we're going to end up building storage buildings for crab pots, you know, that to me would fall under the economic development side of things. Whether they would agree with that or not, I don't know. Okay. Anything else on what's going to become an ongoing issue, I think, for a while? That brings us to information item E, the Pelican Bay Arts Association request for a 5-year agreement. And I believe I heard Commissioner Raines say he would recuse himself from, well, we're not going to be doing a vote here anyway, so you can, don't worry about it.
Okay, so yeah, we got a request from the Pelican Bay Arts Association for a 5-year agreement, which we go through this current year all the way through 2026. Port staff doesn't have a problem with the agreement. We think it's a great event here at the port. The only thing we were concerned with is just the access. They're requesting a clear aisleway between the handrail and the artwork and the vendors. We did talk to Bruce Ellis that actually he's the only one that's presenting or going to be putting in for events here. He doesn't have a problem. Other than the Pirate Festival is the only one that he won't be able to accommodate that aisleway. But Eric, all the other events, he'll definitely work on moving the vendors away from the boardwalk. But he, because the Pirate Festival, the vendors, they show up with all their gear. He needs that whole bar boardwalk not encroach onto the fire lane. So he needs to have those tents that far back and all their gear for the 3 days that they're here. That's the reason he gave us.
Isn't all the power?
There's power back there, that there's some cords that run back there.
And then aren't a lot of the tents tied down or weighted down? And I'm worried about tripping hazard, fire hazard, electric stuff at all. Because when I've been down there, everything seems to be back here. They have cords going back to power. So you're going to have people walking on both sides with potential of tripping on ropes and buckets and electrical cords.
Yeah, the smaller events, he's only here one day. I don't think they have too much of a problem with that. The longer events, like the Pirate Festival, anything that's more than one day, the tents are there for longer periods of time, whether you have the wind and whatnot. I think that's where he can accommodate the smaller events, having all those, everything moved away from it. But the bigger events, he's saying that he can't accommodate the
If items. They sign up to have an event, they're just, is the port liable, or is then the event sponsor liable for any injuries that happen there?
They have insurance.
They're liable if someone trips.
Well, it's
to whatever.
It's another layer for to protect the port, but yes, they have their insurance.
Well, it sounds to me like what you're saying is that in most cases we can accommodate this request with the exception of like 4 days for the park.
Yes. That's the word we got.
Okay. Well, I know some of the concern from the artists themselves are damage to their artwork that's hanging up there. So I think that at the very least, we should make sure that it's clear if we're going to allow people to put the stuff right up against the fence, that they're responsible for not damaging the artwork that's there. And hold them accountable for that kind of thing. You know, we've been really lucky that we've had no vandalism, no damage, none of those kind of things to any of those pieces of art that are up there, and I'm happy about that. But, you know, behind the scenes, I know Ken's wife is down there at least a couple of times a week with, you know, cleaning rags and solvents and things to keep, you know, stuff off of those, bird poop and mildew and whatever else. So there's a lot that goes into this behind the scenes. So Anyway. Okay. Anything further? All right. So the byproduct of this item, when we make our formal decision on this, it will be to agree to a 5-year lease, essentially, and then some language to write back to them about, you know, that we're okay with this except for the fire accessible, it's going to be a problem kind of thing.
Yep.
And that, that the event planner will be responsible for damaged art.
Right. Yeah, we'll tell them that's going to be going, put in provision there as far as art goes. Okay, that brings information to item F, the Port of Perkins Harbor Employee Handbook for 2022. This looks pretty much like standard boilerplate annual revisions, right?
Yeah, it is. But the only thing that's not standard per se is the 30, we reduced the 90-day probationary period to 60. We don't need 90 days for a probationary period for new employees, so we reduced it to 60. And also, for full-time employees, it's 30 hours or more. It used to be 40 hours a week, but it's reduced to 30. It ties to the state's health new laws that if you work more than 30 hours in one week, you're supposed to give them health insurance. So we're making that, if you give 30 hours, then you get full benefit.
So there's less advantage to hiring a short-term employee and might as well just hire them full-time, right?
In some instances, yes. I mean, there's some employees that want only work 3 days because they have other work and stuff like that. So we still have one employee that's part-time that works 3 days. He works on the weekends for us.
Because what it does cut into is holidays. Holidays and our recognized paid time off when you have all full-time employees, they all get the time off. So that reduces the part-time employees that you can keep here during those times. So it means fuel dock gets closed, the RV park office will be closed, our port office will be closed. We don't have part-time people. We're paying them to be off. So
actually, we have two part-time. We have one part-time in the office.
Oh, Charlie.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's what it means. It means that when, you know, it also means that during holidays, port businesses will be closed, or port operations will be.
Given the current staffing level. But yeah. That could change.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, right now we're talking about a handbook, so that's all, that's what the changes are primarily.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and besides, you know, SDAO, they recommend, we're following SDAO's handbook, they recommended changes. We noted the changes that they recommended. And they had a lot of changes here and there. So, any question? I don't know if anybody read every page of it. There's a lot.
I do.
Oh, good.
I saw some new things down here.
Yeah.
Okay. That brings us to information item G, which in my opinion is the exciting part of this agenda. Mm-hmm. So you want to go over that?
Yeah, Business Oregon approved our FEMA matching. Both projects, DR4432 and DR4452, both of them, well, one's $474,732. That's for 4432. And then 4452, they're agreed to $458,934. This is just a formal letter saying they approved it. We will get a contract. Once we get the contract, we'll bring it to the board for approval, formal approval.
So to make sure that I'm reading this correctly, when you take what they call Project 22009 and 22008, those are each separate funding sources in the amount of $774,000 and $458,000. Which, when coupled with FEMA, produces in excess of $4 million worth of work. Is that correct?
Should be just under $4 million. It's like $300,000, $3,800,000.
Okay.
Yeah, just under four. Good. Business Oregon will only match up to 500,000, and after that, we'd have to find other funding for it. So we just got lucky that both these projects, with the mitigation work and everything, is almost $4 million. So our matching is going to be covered. There is some room if we had any change orders that everybody agrees to. I mean, there is room that they'll pick up the rest of the matching for that, but we only got a couple hundred thousand dollars for any kind of change order, so.
Well, nonetheless, we're still looking at a pretty significant infusion of funds into the community based on this. And that's not chump change.
Nope.
I don't know how much local contracting will be involved, but I'm assuming there's going to be some rock and
it's going to be a bunch.
Gravel and stuff that's going to show up locally here.
I think it's going to be all local. Majority of it's going to be local. Okay.
I have a good feeling it's going to be local.
All the big equipment to move all those slopes and everything could be done locally.
Yeah. It's what for those slopes, any contracting company is going to rent no matter what. They just, most construction companies won't keep a long arm excavator like that sitting in their yard. They'll just rent them. So, with the contractors we have here, they're good contractors. I think this is well within the scope of what they can do. So I'm definitely expecting to get, prices and bids from them, to see where they're at. So.
Well, that's even better. If we can do it all locally, that would be wonderful.
Have you already worked out a tentative timeline for this, or will we be getting that shortly?
Yeah, I think in the last meeting or meeting before I had a schedule. I can produce that schedule again if you like.
Yeah, you gave us. We asked you to give us some sort of a timeline, and you gave us a projected timeline.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And we've got to remember that this was all based on the in-water work period, which is October, end of October or first of October.
Mid-October
through
February
28th. Okay. So the major disruptions to port operations, if you will, are going to be during that period, which is kind of an off season.
Yeah, but there's going to be some work, like saying the gear storage stuff, the sediment basin, the roads, some of the roads, and the boatyard. We're looking at paving the boatyard this summer. Yeah. Some of the roads going.
The bank, the whole west side bank.
Things that do not interfere with water.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And then the buying the equipment. That's another big thing. Once we get the approval, we're going to be buying the dredge and all the equipment that goes along with the dredge.
That's
okay. So I'm assuming the boatyard knows this is coming.
I've been talking to Kenny more and more about it, but and I think we got a plan for whatever boats that are in there to build a shuffle them, move them, let them pave, move them back, and then pave more. We have a little bit of a shuffle, but it's just tight areas that we got to deal with.
So I assume this would temporarily affect haul-off to them while you're in there actually working?
It could. We'll have to see how it is. But, I mean, we'll just change the scheduling, the best that we can, but we'll always be open and available for emergencies that come up.
Yeah.
Well, big deal. I mean, a big deal.
It's exciting.
Yes, big changes. I mean, it's
going to be a good change.
It has to happen, too. If not, DEQ is going to make us change what we do here. So.
Well, I am certainly gratified that FEMA has gone in a different direction than they used to go, and that they're into mitigating future events and paying for that rather than just paying for the wreck. Pretty good.
Big deal. It's a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. $1.6 million is for mitigation under this project.
Wow.
So.
Good job.
Yeah.
I don't suppose there's any way we could get somebody from the media to hold still long enough to report on this. Huh?
I can shoot some emails to the manager.
You should.
Well, I was thinking more in terms of one of the TV stations coming over here from Bedford and saying, hey, look, this is. I don't know. I'm not a TV person, so maybe a crane isn't too spectacular unless it falls on somebody. But, I would think that we could at least try and ask them and see if they want to come over and cover some stuff.
Okay.
Okay, cool. Anything else? It's nice to get $4 million instead of $10 million.
Right?
Okay, that brings us to item H, the sale of business, Founders Fresh Craft consent to assignment and assumption of lease.
Yeah, the owners of the current business came in and said that they're going to sell it to the new owners, which is James and Stephanie Pierce. I know the board's seen the same kind of agreements for other businesses. With our new lawyer, I gave him a draft. Hopefully, we won't have too many changes by the meeting, but it's just the same thing that we've had before, where one owner is selling it to another owner, and then he's assumed the lease the rest of the time of the lease, which is, I think, another 2 more years on his lease.
So he would take possession of the premises as is?
Yes.
Without being required to do anything to it?
Correct.
That would happen when we renew the lease. If there's going to be some changes, that's the point at which we'd have to do that.
If that's what we want to do, yes. If something changes, if he wants to, I think he does plan on changing some things down there, but he's not going to do anything until a new lease comes around.
Okay. Do we know anything about the new owners? Or are they folks for somebody
else? James has the fishing vessel EZZ,
oh.
And his dad has the Leonard G. They're the previous owners of Tidewind Sport Fishing before Kyle took it over. So they've been here for years.
And they're both active fishermen. I see those folks on lot.
So on their water discharges and stuff down there with the product that they're cooking, is that fine?
They are required to follow all
the
rules, and I told them that, again, that is up to them. They know they're not supposed to be discharging any water in there. I told James specifically that if that means you have to put your boat over here, pump it into a tank, whatever you have to do to follow the rules. But if you're discharging water in there, then we're going to tell you to stop.
Okay.
So I'm trying to leave it on him. It's his building, his infrastructure, that he's responsible for following the rules. We will be there to tell them when he's not.
Okay.
What does Bill do with the water then?
Bill, as far as I know, is taking it away, but I have not ever visibly seen any discharge into the water, and but if I do, I will tell him to stop.
But don't you also have a recirculating system there where they just recirculate seawater through those tanks?
That's what I believe they're doing.
And that's not a discharge issue?
Currently, right now, it's not processing. So
okay.
It's kind of like unloading fish through a de-icer. You know, they don't consider that processing as much as one might think it is, but it's currently not.
But what you're saying is if they cook the crabs, then they can't put the
that
cook,
is a
cook
huge,
water
that
on.
That is a waste of water.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. That moves us to the North Jetty Access.
All right, North Jetty Access. So recently we had some people camping out there. People were coming into the port office asking the port to do something about it, but it's not our property. We suggested they contact the sheriff. Then they did, and I guess the sheriff told them to contact the port. So it's kind of going in a big circle. So anyways, before anybody did anything, the people who are camping there, they ended up leaving, and then we just put some temporary barricades out where my little red line's at. We did contact the Corps of Engineers. They don't have a problem with us putting a gate out there, like a permanent gate type of thing, as long as they have a key for it, for access. So it's kind of thrown out to the board what the board would want to do. The access to that crab dock isn't great at all. If you've been down that road, it's a pothole, mega pothole road. There's no turning around spot. You have to do a 6-point turnaround to get off that jetty. So it's not safe to have cars going down there, at least in my opinion, to go down there and try to turn around. Travis has been there.
Cars have gone off the side. We have pulled cars back
right
up the jetty.
I would be I would be especially nervous because we don't own the property, so we're basically allowing access onto Corps of Engineers property, and I suspect if you ask them if they had a choice, they'd tell you, no, don't do that, because...
Most jetty accesses that you see don't allow driving.
Right.
Most all of them are gated.
So if we were to remove that crab dock, would we have use for that somewhere else, for parts?
The gangway is a current ADA standard gangway, so in the event that we ever make any new changes to anywhere or add something else, that would be a huge step in the right direction of having a gangway to be able to use. The docks would just go up with the rest of the docks, and then we would pull the pilings out.
The pilings are good. We probably reuse the pilings.
Yeah, we could probably reuse the pilings. I mean, all of our receiving docks at some point are going to need new fender pilings and, you know, work done to them. So we'll be able to use the pilings. And the gangway, like I said, we'll be able to use on any other new project.
So to the best of our knowledge, that was not ever, that crab dock wasn't ever developed with any kind of grant funds from Marine Board or anybody?
No, that dock, that, I believe, was the, wasn't there docks out there?
Yeah, there's docks. Docks used to line that entire jetty, and there's two points. There's two points that they came off. I think they kept one point and made a crab dock out of it.
Yeah.
And currently right now where it sits, I mean, the things that do happen when they go out, when you have people out there casting lines or crab pots and the boats try and go by, I mean, how nobody's wound one up yet, I don't know. But, and they are kind of right in the middle. You kind of got to go out and make the turn to avoid the whole thing. So,
well, a lot of
those, losing that thing isn't going to be the end of the world. I don't think anybody ever catches anything out there anymore.
It gets a lot of use, though.
People do like walking out there. I mean, I take my kids and we walk down it.
Yeah,
walk down
I see
it
fish,
last weekend.
Fish and crab on there, and families down there fishing. Does it cost us anything to have it there?
Maintenance.
What's that cost a year? What do we do?
I'd say probably $2,000 a year probably goes into maintaining piling hoops, softeners, just checking it. You know, the handrail that's up there. The handrail, I already got to re-weld the handrail back onto the broke it. It doesn't cost us a lot. Right now, like Gary said, there's no, by people driving down there, we're opening the door for something to happen. You know, if we were going to keep it, you know, obviously right now we would keep that there until a much future project came to where we had the ability to remove it all. But by just cutting off traffic right now, I think would be a good first step.
So Travis, once you put a gate up there, if that's what is approved, then would there still be foot traffic able to go there?
Yeah, foot traffic could be fine, and there's no problem with that.
A lot of people, I mean, me and my wife personally use it. We walk there a lot. We walk our dogs there. We take our friends down there. They can see the river.
Yeah. The only thing I would ask is put a sign that says, enter at your own risk, type of thing. Just warn it.
Well, they're very hazardous.
This is not the port's property. It belongs to.
Yeah.
Do you have comments?
Yeah, I think from a navigation standpoint, removal is ideal because those guys throw a floating crab pot or floating ropes out there. I've had to avoid those. I've seen people get, you know, tangled up in them because of the boat traffic. There's no place for them to go. If we're going to lock the gate, the sooner remove it, the better. That would be my thought on it.
Yep. I would say as soon as we have a barge and a crane here, that would be part of the project is to remove that, just take it out of there. The other thing is we do have a fishing pier that's readily accessible and it's much better condition. So it's not like we're removing the only crab fishing area to be had. So.
And it's hazardous sometimes, too.
Yeah. Can be.
Yeah. When the dredge was here, they actually sucked somebody's pole right out of their hand. I thought.
I believe that.
Honestly, if you're down there fishing or crabbing when the dredge is here,
why?
It's kind of on you. Well, I would agree with Ken. That particular spot, when you have traffic going in both directions, can be tight to get around. So.
Good.
Okay. Anything further? All right. Moves us to item J, the stormwater test results for December 13, 2021.
Yep, so we did our fourth and final stormwater test for the year 2021. Since we're in tier two, all the tier two contaminants are kind of a separate category versus the tier one. So anything that's not on tier two, we have to write a report for tier one. So as I put on my little sheet there, we have the tier one and tier two stuff. So tier one, I write a report saying what we're doing. Basically, this is the same thing over and over that we have undeveloped grounds and we're planning on a FEMA project to fix it. That's basically where we're at, trying to fix our issues. So my tier two report, as I mentioned earlier, that should be coming out for corrective actions by the end of the month.
So make sure I understand, which is worse, tier one or tier two?
Tier two is worse.
Okay, so if you're in tier two, you're required to do some remedial action.
Yeah. And it's engineered plan that you have to do, or you find it, I'm assuming.
Okay.
Just so you know, we're at the new year, so now we got four more tests to do this year. So it never ends.
It will never stop.
Well, it will end or reduce if we start passing our tests. I think we have to do a whole year passing, then we can ask for a waiver of not to do these tests. So once we get everything fixed, then a lot of testing can go away.
That's good. Well, it's very time consuming. You have to drive it over, and then the cost is way up too.
So the total suspended solids, that's going to probably be helped significantly by paving, I would assume. Mm-hmm. Copper, you're going to cover that. So that should take care of that as well. And the copper is just the residue from antifouling paint that's been scraped over there all these years, primarily?
Not exactly sure exactly what it's from, but it has this major thing to do with it. Any type of fauna paint is thick copper. Anything anti-fouling it. You'll notice too, the only place we're passing is the fuel dock. And the reason we're passing at the fuel dock is because the money we just put into it, it's paved, it has the proper infrastructure. And this one continuously is the only one that passes. So it goes to prove that the right infrastructure will give you the results you're wanting.
Or it's the best you can do.
Or if you're kidding, you're doing as much as you possibly can.
Okay. Yeah, I look forward to the day we got one of those with nothing back.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a report card if you're good.
So I have one, just a comment. We're going to pave these areas, but also in the boatyard, we won't be creating a washdown area where these boats aren't going to be washed down out on the paved area. They're going to have to make an appointment with you and put them in line or go over to our designated wash area where the water is filtered, recycled.
Yeah, and currently where we do it right now, when we pull the boats back, that right now we have ditches dug over there and we're putting in that wash system that will take care of that particular station, the wash station. It.
Will it take care of any boat we're capable, our hoist is capable of pulling out?
Yes.
So the only thing you have to be worried about the boatyard is when they start grinding and whatnot. So it's going to be really important that they follow the best management practices. Not only Kenny when he's doing it, but when the boat owners are doing their own work, Kenny's going to have to be strict on it, or we're going to have to be more strict.
Well, if we start putting copper and zinc down on top of pavement, it's going to wash more quickly, and we're going to be right back where we started.
Yeah, they're going to have to do some vacuuming and whatever else you got to do to pick that up before the rain hits.
Yeah, well, I'm just thinking driving by that great big port yard up there above Reedsport. A lot of those boats are completely enclosed in a plastic cover with plastic on the pavement.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming that that's to contain all that material so that they don't have to do anything else.
Yeah, they could be sandblasting and they could be painting. And they could be doing all kinds of things inside those containments that we don't have.
We have suggested that on some boats for them to
wrap up. For them to be able to do
Sammy.
What we tell them, you have to do whatever is necessary to keep us within the standards to do your work. Whatever it means, you know, vacuums, plastic, whatever it means. But the second it leaves your site or is uncontained, that's when I tell them, now we have a problem. I don't care how you do it. Just make sure it's done. And if it's not, then you got to stop.
There is no sandblasting allowed in this port. There's none. And no air painting, spray painting. It's not allowed either.
Aerosols.
Yeah. Is there any reason we can't build a building specifically designated for this type of operation?
It's not that we can't. It's about filling out your demand for it. You know, you can put up the building, but if you're only going to get a handful of boats in there. Right now, we don't have the demand for it to justify the cost. And I've been talking to Kenny more and more about it, and because he's starting to develop more and more stuff. He's utilizing that shop. You know, he can get more boats in there. But it's something that I talk with him, that when the demand arrives, then we'll look at putting it in. But until he starts getting some people saying, this is what I want to do and I will come here to do it, I just can't see the expense yet.
Okay. Anything else on Jay? This is the information item K, the boardwalk condition and modification.
It's really moved.
Yeah, so right now, actually, when I wrote this, the gap was 8.5. Now it's 8.75. Travis, you want to talk about this one?
Sure.
We're kind of changing our plan. From what I've got in here, we're changing our idea that we're thinking about doing.
So we had Jack come out yesterday just to kind of look and see again what we had. It is continuing to move. We were contemplating taking the whole structure, the top of it, off. After talking with Jack and re-looking at it, I don't think we're going to be gaining a lot by dismantling it. So right now is where we're at, is we want to just pull up the deck board where the last good part of the boardwalk is, and all the joists are in joist hangers. We're going to cut all the nails loose from in the joist, so it's just sitting in there. So the rest of it can move, but it's not going to keep pulling the rest of it in. And until funds come available, or I guess it's funding really is what it's going to take to dig that whole bank side out, remove the shoring that's in there that's broke, and remove that whole section of boardwalk and do an engineered type bank, you know, pull that whole bank back up and lift. We don't have the money to do that right now, so our goal is to just save what left of the boardwalk, you know, it's still intact. And we're just going to have to wait for funding to come through to be able to redo the whole project. It's going to be a fairly expensive project.
You're going to physically, essentially separate the good boardwalk and the bad boardwalk and let it go where it's going to go. Is there any way to go on the Zoa's end of that thing and anchor that so it doesn't keep doing that?
Not right now, because the piling and the shoring that's meant to hold it all up are failing. So there's not much left we can do. It's not so much that we can keep doing things. We don't have the funds to worry about it right now. It's not high on the priority list of spending $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 on right now. So we need to just stop it from continuing to break and just let it be until either something much more drastic happens, which from Gary and I and Jack looking at it, I don't think something's just going to break, snap, and fall down in the water. You know, it's just going to keep kind of leaning out. So until we have the funds to fix it, I think we just stop the bleeding and wait to fix it. What do you guys think?
I think if it's moving a quarter of an inch a month, it's going to be going to go somewhere. I don't think that's just going to sit there. I mean, it's accelerating, isn't it?
It is accelerating. It accelerated much faster. It slowed down as far as its opening. The reason being is because when there's H piles, with concrete and then a pile in front of it. All that bench pushed up against the concrete shoring, which was pretty fast, and then the shoring had to push and bend the H piles out to hit the piling now, and now those are against each other and pushing on. So we've slowed it down a lot because everything came up against something really hard. So it is slowing down, but I mean, there's. It's,
well, you answered part of my question. So if the entire structure and the entire earth piece is moving, then anchoring that corner with something up there isn't going to stop anything. It's just.
No, it's everything's pushing right out the bottom.
Okay. All right. Well, that may. That means going up on our list of priority list anyway.
So on the funding side of things, this boardwalk damage is on our hazard mitigation program. And that's something that we need to be looking at multiple things we got to do here, but got to keep in mind we got to pay 25% matching for whatever we do. So you know, if this is like $250,000, we got to come up with 25% matching there. Want to do paving at the Barbie part, depending on what funding you get, it could be 25% or 40% matching. I think the state parks go up to 40%. So matching is the key of all these things. We can probably get some repairs. We're going to be talking about Hallmark Dock next. That could be $1 million to $2 million project. But 25% matching, that's a big chunk too. So,
We do have some projects, at least conceptually, in the works to improve our roads. I'm thinking of the new RV park, for example, which isn't going to solve the problem, but it isn't going to hurt it either. I mean, we could build some money quicker to get some match reserve out there sometimes.
Yeah.
So it sounds like we're kind of in the catch-22 dilemma of hoping we make money before we have to spend it.
Yep. The good thing is we do have $200,000 in reserve funds, so it's not like we don't have any money. Just that $200,000 only goes so far, and it depends on how much of a fix we want to do. This boardwalk, when you walk down along the docks on water, you can see other areas that the shoring is failing, and it's pushing against the piling. Same thing that Travis was saying, the H piles, concrete is now pushing against the wood piling. So. It hasn't damaged the structure up on top, but the things are moving down below. So
you can see it. If you go outside the concrete, you'll see stress cracks in the concrete where the banks just pushed on it. The H piles lean out.
So you're basically, we're looking at that entire boardwalk construction as being questionable. We may need to repair a lot more than just this.
The boardwalk is—it's going to be a very in-depth deal if we're going to continue fixing what we have. If we ever are going to continue it, you know, which way we're going to go, if it's going to last long enough to continue and then fix the middle, you know, it's lots of different ways you can go with it. But the end result is that it is starting to show signs of wear, I guess, in a whole lot of different.
Anything else on the boardwalk? All right. That brings us to information item L, the fuel box, fuel tank control box, repair and protective structure.
Yeah, so in the screen, in the packet, I got a picture of the screen, so half the numbers are not showing, so that kind of creates a little problem when we're trying to read our numbers in the tanks. The structure itself is sitting out there in the weather, so Travis and I came up with an idea of doing the bus stop shelter idea that we put around our kiosk. Kind of same idea as put a bus stop structure around that to keep the weather out of the control box. So our guys have to go in there, I think, daily or more than twice a day to read these things, and if there's an alarm going off, then you get in there. And wind can blow there pretty hard, rain sideways.
The door doesn't get shut, it swings open and slams. I mean, that box right there controls our entire fuel box. How we switch our tanks, where all of our alarms come in. It should have been put under a cover a long time ago. This screen is a result of weather but it's.
How old is the old dock?
I mean, that's.
2004 is built.
2004, that's the same screen. So it is two for a new screen, but the screen is $1,000, and the chance of that happening again getting wet, you know, it does stand a chance of it. So by putting a cover over it, hopefully it'll save us a lot of money in the future.
Protecting your investment. I see it.
So we can't come up with a different type of cover that's not $6,000 and $2,000 to ship it in?
We could build one out of 2x4s and metal. It's just any trying to think of longevity. Everything wood that's ever been built here as far as boxes, electrical boxes, are all destroyed and need to be replaced. The bus stop shelter is meant to be out in the weather. It's meant to
take the beating.
So there is other cheaper ways we can do it, but I think as far as the longevity of our investment, this is probably the best way to go.
But with the need of seeding all the extra cash that we need to do the projects we're doing at this time, would that be a wise thing to do?
I still think so.
Really? Even though it was here since 2004.
Yes.
What's the size of this bus stop?
6x10?
6x8.
6x10, 6x8.
Something like that. Same size as the kiosk.
6x8.
Seems to me you can build an awfully nice structure for $11,000 from scratch. Have you got any quotes on anything?
No.
Just on bus stops.
Just on bus stops.
Top shed or plastic, Rubbermaid, and anchor it down.
We got to remember too, I mean, it does blow. Mm-hmm. It is wide open to the wind, so.
All the shelters I've seen out here, I mean, we had a shelter that was at the fuel dock that was sheltering our oil booms. Well, that was destroyed in the weather. That didn't last more than probably 10 years. I like the bus stop idea because it's going to last. It's meant, like Travis was saying, it's meant to be in the weather. I know these other structures I was thinking like maybe a little metal building type of thing, but, I mean, you're talking about a metal building going around that thing. I mean,
there is other ways. If we don't like it, there's other ways we can price it and look at different scenarios, but any other scenario, you're still going to creep up on a dollar amount. You know, labor to put it up is extremely expensive. These bus stops we put that one up in 2 hours. So you do, where you're paying more for the structure, you are making up in labor, not building it. But if we don't like it and you guys want to see other options, I mean, that's what we're here for. You just say we want to look at other options.
Well, it sounds to me like it might be helpful to have some comparison ideas of what you think you could build. That would do the same thing. And then against that, we'd have to weigh the current cost plus the projected longevity of what you would build versus this thing. And also keep in mind that we're not just talking about the screen. Should this whole thing fail, my guess, you can't pump fuel, right?
No, if anything happens, I mean, every tank, it's a pretty complex thing that's sitting there. It runs everything.
Well, we have to also weigh the cost-benefit idea of what happens if this particular system fails, and then we're out of the fuel business for a projected period of time, that's going to be an additional expense or loss of revenue, you know, to weigh against the whole picture.
So just so I know what I'm bringing back to you guys, do you guys have any other ideas of structures that you're thinking of that's in your head? Metal studs, wood studs, concrete siding, metal siding? Like just a lean-to type building. I'm just looking for some ideas of what I'm going after.
Heavy-duty galvanized studs and paneling, metal paneling that is designed for coastal exposure.
So basically, a steel structure.
Yeah.
Okay. Everybody okay with that idea of having a separate idea, cost idea?
I'll look at steel. We'll look at wood. I'll just throw in CMU, and then we'll have the bus stop. That'll give us roughly four different things, four different ways of building it that we can look at.
Okay.
Any of these other ones, we have to remember we are going to be putting lights and other stuff like that into. The good thing about a bus stop is you don't need lights too. So I'll get this together. I don't know if we'll have this ready for the next meeting, but I'll try.
Well, we're going to have to make a decision on replacing the screen pretty soon, I would assume.
So the screen I've already bought.
Oh, yeah.
The screen I already bought, it's within what we have to do. It's basically a maintenance tool that went down. So we've already bought that. Is what we're after now is protecting that investment.
Okay.
So we do have time, like you said. I mean, it's been out there for years. It's just something that is due time to talk about to see what we're going to do.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Information item M, Southern Oregon Credit Services Collection Northwest Active Account. I was confused when I read this. Go ahead.
So this is the list of everything that's with our collection company. And I figured it would be a good reminder of what's out there with the collection company. But they were specifically asking to go to litigation on one collection, which is CBN Enterprises. They feel that they can get that money back through litigation, not through other means, apparently. But that's what they're asking the court for permission to go to litigation.
Well, that brings into question the reason I'm confused, but what about all the rest of them? They don't?
I guess they think that they can get the money. I think there's one person actually paying because we get a little check every month. They probably made some kind of payment agreement, but right now that's what they're thinking. And maybe they have a limit on how much for litigation, but they may have to run through a course. I don't know what their procedures are. You know, some of these are fairly new that we sent to them.
Okay.
So
these aren't all languishing things that have been on the books for a long, long time?
No.
And once it goes to them, there's no cost to us. They take their money out of what they get. So
yep.
Going to litigation is no cost to us.
No, they just still have to ask permission to do it.
But in the case of CBN, she paid the amount she owed the court, correct?
Correct.
So what the difference is what this, the cost of turning it over to collection.
Correct.
So it's their piece of the action that they want to sue for.
Yeah, basically that's what it is. If they don't get it, they'll be looking for us to get it. I mean, I think we already paid that amount anyways because it comes out. I mean, automatically comes out, so that money is left over is actually coming to us to get it. They never lose money.
So they don't assume the debt. We get paid back when they get paid.
Okay, so that's it. If we were to allow them to take this to court and they collect it, the money would be returned to the court. It would
yes.
go to the collection.
There's probably some portion of that goes to the question, but majority of it would be on us. Yeah, their cost. Right.
Okay. All right. Anything else? Information item N. The vessel Miss Stacy. Geez, the hits just keep rolling here today.
So where do you want to start on this one?
Well, the question, as I understand it, this comes down to there's a lien on the boat. The owners have died. The kids don't have any way of getting rid of this without satisfying the lien. So we're in a situation where we've got a boat we can't haul that we don't think has any practical value other than scrap. And now it's up to what the bank's going to do with it, I guess.
Yeah. Currently, right now, we have no responsible owner. There's no insurance on it.
What does no responsible owner mean? Someone has to have, someone has to be on the title to that boat.
She's passed away.
Okay, so then it goes to
the estate.
The estate, which has money owed against it. So
can we check with the Marine Board and find out if they have
it's a commercially documented vessel that doesn't have anything to do with the Marine Board?
The bank has a loan out on that boat. Why isn't the bank the owner?
Someone's got to be the owner.
That's where we've asked the question, and right now the bank is looking at like giving that boat up.
Well, so, but they don't have that option.
We've been talking with our attorney where this is going to get very, this is uncharted waters for us.
I think there's a significant difference between a lien and actual ownership. Because actual ownership would have to go through the process on a documented vessel, which would involve the Fed, for them to get ownership. So all the lien does is it conditions any use of that boat that produces money against what's owed on the lien, is the way I would understand it. So ownership right now is in limbo, and whatever the estate is of this deceased person would be that's the way I would look at this. So you're right, we're in kind of a unique spot because ownership is probably subject to whatever the estate does, and the lien is just waiting for somebody to make a choice and do something with it so they can get their piece of the action.
Well, I have a whole bunch of questions. First one is, what's the length of the boat?
I think it's 54 feet. Okay. I don't have it back. I think it's 54 feet, though.
So when was it last used that you're aware of?
Last year? Maybe year to 2 years. I know it was used 2 years ago.
And it went out of here on its own power and all that. When do you know offhand when the last safety cowl was issued by the Coast Guard?
I don't know.
I can find that out pretty easy. And it should be, the decal should be displayed in the window on the boat.
I don't know.
Okay. So how many crab pots are in storage and how many are on the boat?
None are on the boat. In storage, there's approximately 300. But the crab pots are not... Crab pots are in kind of a weird zone, too, because they're not directly tied with the lien into the boat. So the son of
the siblings,
they're currently still paying the bill for the gear, for the crab pots, because that's not tied to anything with the boat.
But assuming they get abandoned also, we can get legal title to crab pots pretty easily.
Yes, but I have no, they have currently, that's the only thing that they have taken interest in is the crab pots, so that we currently have an owner for the crab pots.
Can we lien those crab pots in anywhere or take them as some sort of collateral against the boat and any costs we have?
I
don't know.
Our attorney would have to tell us that there is some sort of a nexus, business nexus between the boat and the crab pots, in order for us to lien something like that. I would argue if I was there, I'd say no. Both the boats, crab pots are the crab pots.
Yeah, but if they're part of the same ownership and they owe this port money for the boat mortgage, we should be able to put a lien. Again, have to go through attorney. That's what we're paying the person for. But those crab pots have value. The crab permit has value. And the crab permit is attached to the boat. So I don't know. We don't have Joe here, but I don't know what a current crab permit is worth. Do you guys?
$100,000.
Okay.
So if they were to sell that crab.
But if. So the crab pot, the crab permit was probably in Daisy's name and in the person that passed away, her name. So until things. The crab, if nobody renews the crab permit, it just goes back into the
pool.
To the pool of crab permits. Mm-hmm. And I don't think the crab permit necessarily is like a thing that has to go with that boat. It's if you renew it, you get to keep it. If you decide not to renew it, it goes back.
It can be sold. Right. Joe just bought one for his new boat.
There's value to that.
Yeah, but what I think, okay.
But we don't have anybody that owns it.
I think what Travis is saying is that unlike crab pots on the boat, the crab permit is not a durable value because it has to be renewed. And if it's not renewed, then it's no longer valid.
No. The crab pot is real property that can be sold.
The permit.
The permit, yes.
Yeah, but if it's not renewed and it's no longer a valid permit, then I don't believe you can sell it.
Exactly what it is. You can't sell it.
I guess we need an answer to that one, too. Has if that boat was used a year ago or 2 years ago and the engines were working and that, there's certain value to that boat. It looks pretty tacky, but most of that's cosmetic. So what would it cost to have a marine surveyor come in and give us a value of that boat?
I'm not sure. $1,000.
Okay.
That would be an in-water survey. You know, we wouldn't build it. They would build it just to the in-water survey.
And then what would it cost to have that boat towed to Coos Bay if all things fail and that's what we have to do?
Anywhere from $10,000 to $20,000, probably.
And what would it cost to have us pull it over to the closest dock where we can get a crane out on it and basically dismantle as much as we can in the water to the point where can we lift it if it's, you know?
Maybe. It would depend on how much stuff's been added to it through the years, you know, if there's concrete, extra ballast. It was one of the things we ran into with the Chantel Sea, and we stripped everything off from it, and we got them in there with roto hammers chipping out the ballast out of the bow of it, and it still was too heavy. Because I had that thing. It's a maybe. We could maybe get it to a weight. It might not. I don't know.
So I'm not sure about this question, but couldn't you put it out for bid to salvage companies? If we were to inherit the boat.
I would definitely recommend us getting very creative on how we would get rid of it to find and explore the cheapest way to do it. Right off from what it would be cheapest to get it to Coos Bay where you can haul it out and have a steel company along the lines of what we're going to do with the Gypsy Lee ready and demo it right where it sits.
Okay, but we have to get possession of it at first.
All of this
and
depends
right now
on us getting
away
possession.
From that, right?
Yes.
I think, I don't know what our attorney is going to tell us, but it sounds to me like this comes down to a couple of issues. Number one, determining what the actual shape of the boat is, whether it runs, what kind of condition it is from a marine surveyor perspective. That tells us a couple of things, what our options are, if it has value for resale or if it's derelict. If it runs and we ended up with it, I guess an option would be to hire a crew to run it to Coos Bay and tear it apart. So it sounds kind of like we're coming down to really needing to know what kind of shape this boat is in at some point, whether it runs, whether it's, you know, the bottom shot, you know, whatever they can tell from an in-water survey.
So the SBA, the loan company, they're working on getting it surveyed. I just don't know, like Travis saying, he can't haul it out to check it, so it'd be an in-water survey, but they're asking the same question, and they're working on getting a surveyor. Now, we don't have any surveyors here that I'm aware of, so they're going to be coming from out of town, and I don't know what their schedules are, so it could be weeks, could be a month, could be, I don't know what they're working on, but I want to see what they come up with first before we pull the trigger to get the marine surveyor.
Yeah, I don't care who does it. Right. I mean, to me, a fundamental question is what kind of shape is this boat in, and is it worth anything?
Gary, what legal right do we have to put a surveyor on that boat as is?
Yeah, I don't know. But we got James on the line. I don't know if he's listening to all this. I don't know if he wants to chime in at this at any particular time. I know he has his group watching and looking at all the correspondence, so I don't know what. Go ahead, James.
Sure, yeah. Thanks, Gary, and I appreciate the Board of Commissioners. There's these are the right inquiries, right? And it is certainly a sticky scenario or situation we're trying to work through. I guess a few clarifying items as based on what we know today. One, as far as the liens are concerned against the property, you arrived at the right conclusion, which is that a lender having a lien against the property doesn't make them an owner of the vessel. They have an interest in the vessel. And so they have interests or rights that they can exercise in connection with that interest, which includes the ability to foreclose, but they don't become the owner. So it's a limited avenue to pursue remedies. I know Gary and Travis have already been in extensive communications with SBA, and an item that my team is working on is trying to get our arms around, you know, the condition of title here, because we see SBA and their interest. There is also Northwest Farm Credit Services that has interest, some of which have been released, some of which have not. So there's some cloudiness around title that we're trying to work through. The second piece that I would bring up is when it comes to encumbering the crab pot, the personal property there, you know, there isn't, unless there's something, and we will need to take a look at this, unless there's something in like the mortgage agreement or elsewhere that gives the court this right, there isn't an inherent right to cross-collateralize. So what I mean by that is the port can't necessarily automatically tie payment obligations tied to the vessel to obligations tied to the crab pots, unless there's some sort of contractual vehicle that creates that tie. So we'll look at the mortgage agreement and the other documents, but it's not necessarily automatically triggered.
So I have a question. This is still, in regards to the crab pots, if they are listed as property of the estate, can we, whether it's an injunction, I'm not quite sure the right terminology, but file something to prevent the heirs or the bank from selling those crab pots and the crab permit, as far as that goes.
We could try to you know, kind of intervene in the progress of the estate to prevent a certain sale by claiming that we're a senior holder. It's not clear to me. We haven't had a lot of an opportunity yet to look into where the estate stands, the condition. It sounds like I'm not quite sure if the commissioners have a good idea, or Gary or Travis, if you know exactly where they stand with actually working through the estate.
We've been told by Julie, which is the sister of Rick, that the estate's closed. I don't know what that means. Is it closed because it's no more money, or is it closed? I don't know what that means. Maybe you do, what closed means. No longer doing business. I don't know what that means.
Yeah, I mean, if the estate's been closed, typically that means that, you know, they've already kind of worked through the process and the allocation of the assets and liabilities within the estate. Are there opportunities to reopen the estate? It's kind of the classic lawyer answer of it depends. But we can connect with Julie and get an idea of exactly where that stands, and we've got estate folks that can look into reopening it.
So Gary, the crab pots is a completely different agreement that we have that is not attached to the boat correctly. Is that correct?
But it's gear storage here,
right,
at port.
So, but it's not attached to the mortgage of the boat.
But you can't store gear unless you have a mortgage agreement, correct?
No.
No.
Oh, okay. So they're separate.
But the crab pots are listed under the same ownership as the boat in our paperwork.
No. Currently, right now, Rick is the one that has the
gear storage.
He has the gear storage.
Who's Greg?
Rick. He's the son of
okay.
Daisy. Yes. So basically, the crab pots, Rick owns the crab pots, Daisy owns the boat and the gear, which also with the vessel, which from what I understand is included with it, is the hopper, the outrigger poles, the doors, any other gear like that comes with the boat. But the crab pots and the permit, from what I understand, are separate from the Miss Stacy itself.
Well, if there's hoppers and doors, is there another permit associated with this boat? Do you have a ground fish permit?
It probably had a shrimp permit, is what it looks like to me, what they had at one time. But again, if you don't renew the permits, you lose them. It's not, they're not just, it doesn't just stay with the boat and then you renew it whenever you want to go.
Well, then we're probably going to need an inquiry into the status of the permits currently attached to that boat, if they're active or not.
The last time I talked to Joe, Joe said that the craft permit on it is still current.
But
that was all that, that's all that I've been told is current.
That other gear,
the hopper, I mean, that's been there for at least 10 years. It's not that they paid on it and never moved.
It's been here since I've been here, so it's 6 years.
Yeah. And it's been here since I've been here.
So we would have to formally know that, we would have to do an inquiry with ODFW and see.
To see what permits.
What permits are out and what their status is. And when, if this crab hot, or if the crab permit is active, when it expires. Or if it expired. I'm not sure how all those things work, but.
And the SBA gets the survey and then you can go from there.
Go ahead.
Oh, just Gary, Travis, I wanted to make sure I heard that correctly. So in order to have a storage agreement, you don't necessarily need to enter into a moorage agreement. They're not, there's no tie. At least the port doesn't impose any sort of tie. Is that right?
That is right.
Okay. So that, we'll take a closer look at the documents, but that creates a likelihood that there's not an ability to cross-collateralize for the port, that is, between the vessel and other personal property, but we'll take a closer look.
Are you also going to look at the permit and the whether they can legally sell that?
And Kim was asking.
Yes, and my understanding is there's a crabbing permit and a shrimp permit.
I'm not sure about a shrimp. I know there's a crab permit. That's the only thing that I'm sure of.
Okay. Yep, we'll take a look.
Like nice fishing reef. All right. Well, maybe we'll attempt to stuff this can of worms back in the can for a while until we get some more answers. But
I guess the worst part of it all is we have a boat that's not insured out there. And Travis and I were thinking about what's the possibility of the port insuring that boat to have coverage in case that thing does sink. Because if it sinks, we know from Garibaldi's incidents, it's $250,000 to get a boat out of the water. So it might be worthwhile.
We will definitely be looking at $200,000 to get that.
Well, then that reverts the question, goes back to kind of the seminal issue here is if it sinks and if it costs $250,000, who pays for it?
Port probably. Right now, that Garibaldi got stuck with that.
They got stuck with it. So there is potential liability for the port. Do we know what it would cost to insure them?
No, we haven't looked at it. We were thinking about this, I think, yesterday as another alternative.
Someone to buy us some time and have a little bit of insurance.
That might be a reasonable inquiry insurance company to get the absolute minimum insurance we need on it to cover it in case of a catastrophic fire or sinking or whatever.
Yeah.
And just see what it costs. And then we'd have to go from there.
I would also like to see a list of marine surveyors and some costs associated with having one come down and do a thorough inspection of the boat once we can legally get on board. Because I have questions whether we can legally get on board right now. But again, our attorney should be able to tell us that at some point.
I think we have all okay. rights to be able to board that boat. We do currently with any boat that's here. If we suspect there's any type of risk or ongoing problem that could be or might need to be addressed, we have all rights to be able to go onto their boat.
And in our mortgage agreement, it gives you the right to do this.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Go ahead.
I agree. I think at least typically what we see with most ports we work with is that the mortgage agreement is going to allow some access to the boat. Travis and Gary, let's talk about the insurance piece. I've got some folks on my team that can help with that, because I'm not sure if that looks like a separate policy if the port picked it up, or if it would be an endorsement on some coverage that's currently being carried. But we can provide some support there.
Thank you.
Thank you. The other piece about getting on board, it might be helpful to just do a thumbnail inventory of what's on it in terms of electronics and things of value. So we can say at this point we knew it had this on it, in case at a future point it doesn't have that on it.
Okay.
We're going down a brand new path here, so I guess we're going to all kind of learn as we go and pave it as we go, so we'll see where it goes. But I'm glad that, I'm really glad we have a legal staff that is familiar with this stuff that can help us sort through this, because I got a hunch it's not going to be a slam dunk no matter which way it goes.
But does Coast Guard have any involvement in the boat or salvaging or towing? Coast Guard has nothing to do.
Coast Guard probably only involvement is whether or not it's seaworthy enough to go to sea at some point, and if it sinks, I guess.
Even if it sinks in our harbor, they don't. The only control the Coast Guard would have is if it tried to leave and they have some reason or suspicion to believe that it shouldn't be leaving first.
Well, if there was a time in which the boat decided it was going to leave, I believe the Coast Guard has jurisdiction to go over there and say, wait a minute, before you leave, we need to take a look at your boat.
If they felt it was an issue.
Yeah, I think they would have to have some sort of prior knowledge.
Well,
I don't know. It would be,
it's
a good question what they can and actually can't do.
And that sounds like we're building an agenda item clear out to Z on this one that we can do. Okay, anything further on Ms. Stacy?
No, look forward to the future.
Just as a side note, we had this discussion internally, but at some point maybe we want to think about whether we want more boats here that we can't handle, too.
How
we might deal with that, because that could be an issue. I'm not betting against anything, but I'm looking at the HADA thinking if we ever ended up with a HADA, that could be a real challenge. Even towing the HADA somewhere could be a real challenge. Okay, let's move on to information item O, financial consultant contract.
And so staff is asking to just extend his contract 1 year. We did the advertisement a year ago. He has no changes on his rates. It'll be the same thing that we had before, so we're just asking for extension for 1 year. This is Gerald Burns. He's the one that helps Kim out throughout the year, and then helps the audit to get done on time.
We've been happy with them.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. Information item P, Curry County Sheriff Substation Memorandum of Understanding.
Yeah, this is to let you know that we couldn't find any documents in our files. I asked Curry County if they had anything. They had no documents. It figures that like a handshake type of thing. So I'm drafting up an MOU for our lawyer review and let the board review it, and we'll let the county review it. So hopefully in a month we'll have something for you guys to look at.
Great. Okay.
So Gary, I hope that in your MOU that you put in there, since they have their own maintenance department, that they take care of their maintenance instead of our costs, since we give them the deal over there.
Yeah, right now on my draft, I was working on it. It's going to be similar to what the tenants have, and I may change some board, but they'll be responsible for all the stuff that's inside that building. But the structure itself will be our responsibility, type of thing. But it'd be kind of structured, at least at start, like a tenant's type of thing, responsibilities.
Thank you.
Information item Q, Zolo on the water late night activity.
Yeah, I don't know if the board knows, but he's been having some late night activities. I listed a few there that he had a comedy show concert is happening after 10 p.m. Our port hours are typically from 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. So he was also planning on doing some Sundays pizza and cocktails until 1 a.m. I talked to Ian yesterday. He says all the late night stuff has stopped. He's not going to do any more until he has a lease that states what he's doing. And he doesn't plan on doing anything from here until summertime, spring, summertime. So he'll give me something in writing what he wants to do, and then I'll draft up an amendment to the lease and let you guys look at it. That's the kind of game plan.
Well, my initial reaction to this is I don't have any objections to it. It's just that we need to know that it's happening from the perspective of, you know, parking enforcement and all those kind of things. If that's going to be happening, we need to know it's going to be happening. So,
great.
Okay.
And if he does those things, is there any additional police or anything else that needs to be done if he's got a bunch of people out there late at night?
Maybe for him, but not for us.
We require that of him in the new lease, or is it already in there?
I think he's in this lease, you know, he's responsible for what's happening. It's basically allowing him the approval to be able to do it, which just compounds into, like, our security. We have cars there past the time that they're supposed to be there. So if we adjust his agreement, and that's just where we go, we would do parking passes of some sort, for parking passes for his employees. So security at night would know that they're, you know, cleared to be there, but we can't really do that until it's approved for him to have these after hours activities.
Well, I think it's also important to remember that, you know, we're in some stage of having a discussion with the Marine Board about the use of that facility after fishing hours for parking for his business. And so if we had, you know, we're working to try and help him, is what I'm trying to say, is we've been doing that all along. If we have an additional condition in his lease that describes what may happen, that's all good for him and for us if we end up at the Marine Board saying, here's the deal. We're gonna allow people to park there from, you know, 6 o'clock at night till 1 in the morning on, and that's it. So that it's clear what's going on.
And currently right now, we're still telling security to write parking warning tickets for anybody that is parked over there.
Yeah, in the boat launch area.
That's his job to continue still doing it.
You haven't been down here this weekend on a gorgeous day. It's like leaves falling. People are just pulling in.
And it's a very difficult one to overcome.
Okay, that brings us to the SAO annual conference. Eugene, Oregon.
So the conference, I don't know if you guys get the email updates, but it's no longer in person.
Nope.
So I don't know if anybody wanted to go there. I was going to do it virtual anyways, but if you want to do a virtual thing, just let us know. We can sign you up, or if you already signed up, you can do it by email. There is a cost associated with the virtual thing, $75 per person.
Even if all we want to attend is the port meeting?
I don't know. There is things. I'm not sure how they do that, but there is. You can select certain things, but I don't know if there's that selection. I don't know if they give you that option or not. There's other options where you pay for listening to speakers and stuff, but the port caucus one that you're thinking of, I don't know. You can always come to my computer.
Come on, I don't even know if they would have those separate caucuses.
I think they do.
As part of a virtual thing?
We have a virtual conference in your office.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
If you want it.
Your office? I've given you a ticket one.
It's in Trevor's office.
In Brett's office. We'll be live down here.
Well, I mean, when we go to this conference, a bunch of us go to those meetings. It's not considered a meeting. It's just a
conference.
Yeah.
But I like the SBO conference. I got a lot of information out of it. But I really enjoyed the port piece where we sat down with the other ports and just kind of got familiar with each other and had an idea of what's going on. And I think it's important for us as commissioners to have a relationship with other court commissioners, because obviously we are continually looking for the better mousetrap out there. And if somebody's building it, I'm okay with plagiarizing. So I got through school.
Yeah.
Not really. But anyway, that to me was one of the real beneficial things out of this conference, was being able to network with those people. And, you know, coincidental other stuff I do, I know several court commissioners now, and guess what? They have the same problems we do.
All right. I like that option, Harry.
Yep.
Good.
Okay. Bluefin Realty Lease Renewal Amendment Number 1. So this lease ends January 31st of 2022. Now, is that because she assumed the lease from Barbara Caramel?
No, she has a new lease. She entered a new lease only for 1 year.
Oh, okay.
She only wanted 1 year because she wasn't sure exactly how things were going. Now she wants to extend it to 3 years.
Okay.
And she wanted to add another partner to it, so the draft has her partner plus the 3-year extension.
Okay. And they've been fine.
Yeah, it's been great.
Okay. Hallmark receiving dock condition. Get another broken arm.
So on this one, as you can see in my picture on 213, you know, we have a broken pile that I call it structural, that's underneath the deck. Then we have another broken pile. And then we have a missing pile. So those three there, there's some concern with me and Travis. There is a fender pile that's missing now. We asked Jack to come out here. He was out here yesterday taking a look at the dock, and he's recommending to get a experienced structural engineer that has experience on looking at docks to give us a report on this dock. It may take a couple weeks.
Did it fail just from age, or do we think a boat did this?
Both.
Is that dock on any camera? Did we try to find out who did it? Do we care?
We don't have any. I don't know who did it. We don't have any cameras right now pointing towards that dock. No.
So would we be able to utilize those piles that that you have over at that craft dock?
Probably not. We could maybe use them for fender piles. You know, fender piles to put right in the front for more tie-up spots for the boats. We could use them for that. But for structural underneath it,
no.
Okay. And the dock itself, it's there's more problems other than just those missing piles, broken piles. There's concrete further back that's lifting or sinking, or something's going on with the structure itself. So
breaking the top of the concrete out.
Yeah, it's important to get somebody to look at it and give us their
could be those supports are moving or shifting.
The dock's been there for a long time. You know, movement is what's going to happen. It's definitely showing signs of it now.
I initially was saying, oh, let's find out who hit it and broke it. But the more I got to thinking about it, that you're probably dealing with years of you know, contributing damage just over time as those things deteriorate. Everybody who hits it does something. And if your number comes up and you're the guy that hits it and falls over, then that's... You know, short of going 20 miles an hour into it, that's probably not something we can hang on just an individual. But I do know that dock. When I watched some loading crab pots over there, there's a lot of people who would be well served to slow down when they dock their boat. You know, not all boat operators are the same.
But you can even see by this picture, it's years of wear.
Sure.
And
well,
you know, you can see in the concrete, there's rebar showing in all the concrete. I mean, we just need to decide what's best and, you know, where that dock stands.
Okay, so after the structural engineer comes, we'll get
I think Hallmark still has another 5 years on their lease-ish. So, it's, you know, we want to keep them operating and working as long as possible. So,
Well, it's just, I mean, this is just a continuation of what's been going on here since I've been here. It's just one thing after another that's reached this life expectancy that maintenance has probably been kicked down the road a few times anyway, and so we're just, it's just all catching up with it. That's...
We have many projects like that.
That's the life of the Port of Brooklyn.
But we are knocking them down, though.
We are?
Yeah. No, no question about that. But, you know, seems like some days the list keeps growing faster than we can take care of it. Okay. Information item U.
Yeah, so there's some, looks like there's some excitement about getting the 4th of July fireworks back. I'm assuming down here at the port, they invited the group invited the port to the City of Brookings. The City of Brookings is kind of hosting this meeting. I think it's stemming from the manager from Fred Meyer. He's trying to put a fundraiser put together. So I plan on attending that meeting. Actually, it's tomorrow is their meeting. And if they do plan on doing it down here, I was just going to give them, you know, our typical thing that we had to do in the past. You know, there's a safety zone that nobody can enter, so you got to have a lot of traffic and crowd control. So there's a lot of planning, volunteers or paid volunteers or whatever needs to be done, but there is a lot of stuff that needs to be looked at if you're going to have it down here.
And there's a lot of cleanup.
Oh, yeah.
Not necessarily associated with the formal fireworks show, but last year was significant. And there was a whole bunch of volunteers cleaning the beach. I was impressed. There were a lot of people down there taking care of it. So
Yeah, we're basically looking at this like any other event. You know, the port has the venue. The port has the area for it to happen. The port does not have staff to be able to help with it. So that's kind of where we're going into it, that we have the spot, we have the areas for it to happen, but you know, you guys got to come to the table with the people and how it's all going to happen, because our staff is busy with the rest of the board the whole time. Well, and or off.
I know you guys are super people, but seven of you aren't going to control a crowd of 400 people or 500 yeah. people. I'm sorry.
And traffic.
And traffic and everything that goes with
you know, and we're kind of one of those things, again, where we want somebody else to put it together and then come down and talk to us. And, you know.
There you go.
Yeah. And usually the sheriff closes Full Basin Road down. You know, they have traffic control. They have a unit or a command unit. But that's usually when Snap has had the hotel. I don't know if this hotel owners will let them do it. So they may ask for some space here in the port for a command unit, which I wouldn't have a problem giving them. Space, but just coordinating. So,
well, aside from being a port commissioner, stepping back and looking at this as an Oregonian, I've never understood fireworks in Oregon. You know, in the timber community, it just seems counterintuitive to me to be shooting explosives over your trees, but the port is an exception to that. At least we can shoot them over the ocean here and hopefully they'll come down safely. But Pine and Ben, they never got that.
No. They spring all the fire trucks down and start putting out fire.
Okay. The people in the RV park, they do more fireworks than the fireworks.
All right, that brings us to item V as in Victor, Basin 1 storm damage to vessel.
Yeah, so last Monday, when we had the storm blow through here, we had a boat break loose. Actually, the winds and the surge actually broke the cleat that the boat was tied to, and that caused the boat to swing over and hit another boat adjacent to it. So there's some, I guess it's called cosmetic damage that happened to both boats. We did an incident report, took pictures, we sent this to SDAO, our insurance carrier, and told them to open the claim up to review all of our documents and see where it stands. We did contact the boat owners, let them know, submit stuff to their insurance, and let their insurance companies figure out who's responsible or not.
So it involves us because the cleat failed?
Yes. Okay. Or dock failed.
We're not liable if the rope failed.
No. And I'm not even so sure that
we're
I'm not sure we're still liable. You know, our mortgage agreement holds us harmless of quite a bit, according to what it says, but being that our infrastructure is what, I mean, it's not even that the CLEAT broke. I mean, they've ripped the whole board off the dock.
Oh.
So
it was tighty tight.
Did you guys see this? I don't know if you guys have anything here. But, I mean, that's the wood of the dock. And it's part of our new docks that we got back in the tsunami era. And the wood's not as strong as the rest of the docks. Let's put it that way. Those are 40-foot solid concrete fingers. They're not 10-foot individual ones like the rest of them. So the wood that's on it is essentially a rub board is all it is. So the boat's not coming up against concrete and somewhere for the cleats to go to. And at the end, the piling hoop that holds the piling, that this whaler is notched out for the piling hoop, and then it's countersunk. So you're left with like a half inch worth of meat on this board that on the very end of it. So we've been changing these and like putting them on the piling hoop, which I'm not super crazy about doing either, but it's definitely a weak spot of our docks.
They didn't have a side tie or anything to hold the boat in place?
Oh, they had multiple on there, but this has happened before. We've had this happen before with other fingers, and it's just a...
I think what she's saying is when that broke loose, the rest of the boat came loose, right? You're saying if it's...
Yeah, so why...
I think just the wind and everything, I think it just...
So, I mean, this boat's a 43-foot boat. So when the bow line comes out, I mean, the wind down there, I mean, it's 40-50 mile an hour. It's backed in pointing out towards the Coast Guard, I guess. So the bow's into it. So when it broke, it swung over. Both the boats next to it, their bows were out.
Oh, okay.
So it just, and with both of them in there like that, you're talking 3 feet of space in between them. So it doesn't take much for it just to swing over and start hitting it. And then the swim platform went underneath the triangle and the edge of the dock because it went sideways and went up and down and ripped part of the swim platform there.
Well, it sounds like we'll get an insurance answer to a lot of the things.
Okay.
Yep. Okay. A mouthful. Mountain View Custom Cycles LLC and Rebel Inc. Tattoo Studios LLC and Barbershop Lease.
Okay, so his lease ended December 31st, and he's currently going month to month. He wants to extend his lease another year, but he has an outstanding balance with us. So he told us that he's working on making payments. He did make payments just recently, but he still has $293, $295 outstanding past 90 days. So we sent him the default notice that we normally send after 90 days with anybody else. But he wants to stay here. He's working it out. COVID has decimated his motorcycle shop. He can't get parts. So he's kind of a casualty of the COVID and supply chain issues.
Was he also in that COVID relief plan that
he got relief from the court and the Oregon.
Okay. Thank you.
So he has the lease for that building. And he is the motorcycle guy and the tattoo guy, and the barbershop leases, subleases from him?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
So we're only dealing with one person, three businesses.
We have one lease, one person with a lease. Yeah. So, anyhow, this is just letting the board know where that's kind of standing at. You know, if we terminate the lease, you know, there's actually several months that we got to go through of removing it from the property and whatnot. So we're trying to work through it right now. See if he can make his payments.
So could he just stay on month to month until he brings it up to date and then come to support with the lease?
That's what I'm hoping that he does that. I mean, he says he's working on getting it paid off. He's thinking about selling his house. I'm not sure what that means.
What's his monthly payment?
It's $750.
Well,
so
my hope he stays, because if he leaves, we're going to have to make a decision about what to do with that building.
Yeah.
I'm not sure it's future leasable, but that's a different issue. So. Okay, so information item X, the Tidewind Sport Fishing request for signage space.
Hi, I just got this letter in actually yesterday. I figured I'd just bring it up to the board as an information item, just to let you know that Tidewinds is looking at, in his letter, he's requesting to lease some ground to put a sign or a couple signs up. So I just getting a feel of what the board thinks about that. I think if we are interested, you'll probably put together what the sign might look like, how big of an area, but I don't know if that's even something that we want to entertain.
Don't we have a sign board?
Yeah.
Well, why we don't lease spots for other signs, do we?
This is definitely something outside the box what we usually do.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, if he wants to put a sign out there by the road and we approve the sign and the construction of the sign.
We have sign limits. We have limitations to what people have the ability to put out for signs. He already has one sign that's out there that's in addition to what typically allowed. So he's came to me a couple different times wanting more signage, more advertisement for his business. So I told him to write a letter, and what he wants to do is lease ground to be able to increase signage. So that's why we're here, because it's new compared to anything that we've ever tried to lease.
So implied right now with having a business here is the opportunity to put a sign out someplace to advertise your business as long as it meets our standard. So he's asking to go a step beyond that. Well, then in that case, I might change my mind about it. That may be what we would, you know, if you want to put up an additional sign above and beyond what we would allow other businesses to do, then I think we should discuss some sort of a lease process. Absent having the cascade effect start, you know, then everybody else says, well, if he's doing it, I'm going to do it. So that's just maybe, I mean, I don't know, he at least bought for a sign, but.
Well, one of the things that he had mentioned is down by our old boatyard across from the hotel, there's two pilings there where he used to hold the sign for forearm tackle that was there. Right now there's nothing there. That was one of the areas that he was looking at wanting to put a sign. So, there is nothing there right now. So
and
that
it doesn't interfere with being able to see or anything for the traffic.
I mean, I would make sure that
it's got to be AI.
We got to follow whatever the middle, and being next to a road, I know there's rules with that too. One of the things I think you said in here was light or something, solar panel and light. We have to be very cautious about how much you light up this street side. We'll just have to figure out what the rules are. But that sign area is kind of what I think he's after trying to be able to do.
Well, even at that, I would, my perspective, an off-premises sign down there, meaning distant from this, would be applicable for a lease, as opposed to the guy that owns the boat shop, who is in that building.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I see those as two different things. So if that's what he wants to do and he proposes to lease it from us, then I think that's fine. And if at such time as that sign is vacated and Kenny, who owns the boat shop, says, well, geez, if I can use that, I'll use it, then I would think that would be a little bit different circumstance, just the way I see it.
So typically with our signage, you're allowed to put a sign on your building location and utilize the entrance signs that we have. I know Kyle, for the other one, I think got permission from the previous manager that was here when that got put up out there. So, you know, any sign that we put up right now, even if Kenny at the boat shop or whoever was down there wanted to use that sign on the front, I think that's starting to walk outside the scope of putting signage on your building. In my opinion, it is. That's kind of one of the things, that if it's that close to the road and not open, I would say it's a leasable area that I don't think anybody really has any titled right to, even how close it is to his business. So
one thing I want to bring up, that there's other charter boats, businesses that moor here, and they've come to us, come to Travis quite a few times, wanting to put a sign up as well. So once we open up this can, we're going to have five other charter boats wanting to put their signs up. So we're going to have cascading effect of all kinds of people want signs. So I just let you guys know that.
Well, here's a different option then. Maybe the port can construct the sign space and lease spaces to whoever wants to go on. You know, we may want to build something in there that we own that we don't have to deal with, and then figure out a square footage arrangement. You know, if you want to put a sign in the size of that table, then it's going to cost you this much and so on. And then that way we could control the proliferation sort of thing.
I agree. Otherwise, you're going to have everybody wanting to put signs. You'll have signs all up and down the street, put a marquee, and everybody can.
Well, and if we own the spot and you decide you want to move to Charleston, take your sign or we'll take it, but it ain't going to be there anymore.
I mean, we kind of already have that going on with what we have above our welcoming signs. I mean, we wanted to addition to or improve on what we have.
We do have a sign ordinance.
No, I understand. This is outside, like I said, this is outside. If we're going to go, we're already somewhat doing that, and our retail customers, we have free of charge if they present us with the sign, we'll put it out there. We're talking something much bigger.
I see a difference here, though, between somebody who's leasing retail space in here and having a signboard for the retail space and having a signboard for mortgage holders or people who want to advertise their fishing business. They're not necessarily the same thing to me.
Well, they don't really have a space for their building like a lot of them do.
Yeah, well, that's
but they're also not paying.
Yeah, the sign board,
nearly the amount that
the signboard that's out there to me is more like a directory. Look who's in here, you know, as opposed to putting one farther down that is, you know, the proper design. This is basically this is fishing center.
Isn't there another one of them signboards down by
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it has our RV park sign on it.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is just too vague. I'd like to see if we're going to look at changing what we're doing as far as what's already required as far as signs, and I want to see a drawing, a scale drawing of what he's proposing and where he wants to put it. And
that's fine. I agree. We're going to have that. But is what we're after right now, are we going to entertain broadening our ability for these businesses to advertise? Or do we just want to keep the signage what we have
and just kill it?
No more and just drop it and be done with it? Or do we want to open this door and develop into something?
Well,
more?
If you're going to open that door, then you need to contact each of our tenants and ask them what they would like to see as far as advertising, because like you said, you give him this and then we've got another charter boat and then we've got, you know, bells and whistle, and we've got the you know, just every one of these businesses wants to put a sign up of the same size. How do you discriminate it?
Well, first come, first serve basis, based on availability of where we have it, and if you write a letter and come to the board and request space to go as a lease. I mean, I'm kind of using this as a unique situation because he asked, he proposed a letter, so if we have existing room that it could maybe put on, you know, and we can lease it, that's where I'm at. But if we're going to make a whole new advertising avenue, we might want to just kick this can down the road for a while.
I don't want to see a sign every 100 yards of another business, you know, that's a 4x8 sheet of plywood. I think that demeans what we're doing as far as any kind of beautification and that sort of thing.
So. And that's where I'm at. So, I mean, if we're going to allow one big sign, we can just assume that no sign's going to get smaller. It's just going to be this huge poster boards of these huge signs. So, you know, it might be some that we might not want to entertain. You know, you have your ability to advertise on your building. You have an ability to advertise out by the road with what infrastructure we have. And aside from that, no more roads. You know, if you want to publicize it that much, you might call ODOT. You might call the county and look at other spots that they might have. But I agree. I have an issue with every single person wanting to come down here and be saying, I want to lease a spot for, well, you know, $20 a month. And,
but he's looking at a spot that already had a sign.
Absolutely. And I think, I mean, I'm not saying what he's doing is I think it's a good idea.
And
it's an available spot to be.
And
but
people can only lease what we have available.
There was a line there at one time, right?
It was for the business.
Forum tackle for that building that was for the business that was right there.
I like Richard's proposal. Put up a sign that'll accommodate X number of signs of certain sizes. We own it. I think that's it.
I'm really torn because I get out a lot. Who can I see about going fishing? And, you know, you have a few people here, but it certainly doesn't cover the waterfront of what's available out there. I mean, I'm just in my mind, I'm seeing a sign out there that says, you know, come and enjoy the Port of Brookings Harbor and then have all these fishing signs on a tarboat sign. That would be a place where people could go look and then figure out what to do from there. I mean, I empathize with these guys. They've got Facebook pages and they got all that kind of stuff. But, you know, if you're here from Tupelo, Mississippi, and you want to go fishing tomorrow, you're probably going to go, well, where can I go find out about doing that? And I'm thinking of places like Garibaldi. They've got signs everywhere. I mean, it doesn't look good to me.
Yeah.
So, I can foresee an advantage to us doing that sign of our own that we say, you want to leave space, here you go.
Do you limit the size and how many type of thing?
Absolutely.
So we're talking something above and beyond what we have for an entrance right now. Now, with that being said, is this a road we're going to go down right now? Because those are expensive to buy. Signage, kiosk type things for what we're talking, they're expensive. So
Is
this something we want to continue humoring? Is this something, what I'm asking is, am I going to put the brakes on this right now or am I going to unearth more information for us? You don't have to say anything. I can take your writing on the walls. I don't want to vote, but do we want to humor more signage at this port at this time? Or are we thinking that it might be best just to wait for a little bit and see if there's more demand for it down the road?
Like everything else, it's going to come down to a cost analysis of what we spend versus what we get. We're about to enter into a different, here's the other thing that sticks in my mind, is we're about to stick these guys with a $300 bill to use this port for those kinds of activities. And I don't think it would be inappropriate to give them an opportunity to advertise based on a space available situation. So we don't want to do something we're going to lose money on, but at the same time, I think it's an opportunity for us to kind of bolster a side of the business we have up to this point.
Okay. I'll look at ideas and what's out there that can be done, and we'll talk about it at a later date.
How many advertisers do we have on the webcam?
Lots of people that are thinking about it.
People
that
how many do we have?
Zero that have actually came through with anything. Pacific Seafood's still the only one that's on there.
They're not paying. But they all want extra things that we're not going to give them. They want, like, their own web page or
their own web page. They want to be in the middle, middle, and they want it.
Tell our two charter companies and all the other guys that there's a good place to start with their advertising.
I've told all of them that this is an option for you to be able to utilize for good advertising. I told them, you know, we know how many people look at the web camera, you know, and it's a good tool. I put them in contact with Danielle. We're just waiting to see if they ever do it. Again, it's a commitment thing. They want I find a lot of people want us to do the legwork for them. They don't. They just want to say it and have it happen. So no forms have been filled out.
Other than Tidemans, how many people actually come in and say, hey, I want to put a sign up? Is that a daily thing, weekly thing, monthly thing?
It's among the charters.
It's
among the charter guidebooks. There's
two or three.
Big business demand struggle for...
So there's not 100 people out there wanting to put signs up.
I bet. Yeah.
Five.
Well, right now you have...
Certainly right now you have Dave
Castellanos and Andy Martin that have signs up, but I know.
And those are the only three that are consistently seem to haggle for that front advertising spot.
But I suspect if you were to offer the opportunity to, of course, Andy Martin covers six, maybe seven votes now, six votes anyway, of the 17 that I know of. But if you were to offer that opportunity to Screaming Reels or Plugs and Bugs and some of those kind of guys that are, you know, smaller vessels, they may say, yeah, I'd like to do that. It'd give me a place to get my name out there. I don't know.
Okay.
I like this one. This is information item victory. The lap. Oh no, this is yellow. Never mind. Sorry, I almost got that one. 2022 SBIS property casualty insurance renewal and longevity credit and rate lock guarantee.
Yeah, this is just a annual renewal that we do every year. I just went ahead and signed it. Just let you guys know that we're continuing with SBIS insurance like we normally do every year. We do get the credit back, $10,000 credit.
How much?
$10,000.
That's credit against what we owe them?
Yeah.
Because we've been a member for a long time.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Okay. I was hoping that was going to be item victory, but any commissioner comments?
Yeah, just say thank you for all that you guys put in a lot of work getting this agenda together, and these workshops are save us a lot of time. Plus, it gives us time to, you know, really digest something if we need to.
I'm wondering how Knight Security is doing. Are they stepped back up? Are you still have concerns with them?
They have improved. They're improving.
Okay. Sure.
I'd like to thank James for being on board for this nice long meeting today. We appreciate you being here.
Okay.
Absolutely. Thank you. Looking forward.
Good thing we had to do this after we signed the contract, right? So that brings us to our next regular meeting date, which will be Wednesday, January 19th, 2022 at 2 p.m. in this room. And with that, we are adjourned.
Goodbye.
Bye. So, Gary, we've never pursued getting advertising on that river date since we paid so much money.